TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg.
Good save, Pavlik, rebound.
Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets, a division of Bell Media.
Corey Schneider has his fifth shutout of the season.
Good night, Montreal!
Pavlik really helped at key times.
Boy, that's two big saves by Pavlik with his club up by a pair.
First one always is the one you'll remember for the rest of your life.
Scores! Aaron Gagnon! The Jets have their 20th win of the season.
The big plays, the big stories, the biggest news from across the hockey landscape. This is NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things NHL. TSN 1290.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at tsn1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus is on loan from Rick Ralph in the TSN 1290 Roundtable. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Coming up on this evening's program, in about 30 minutes' time from the Vancouver province, Ben Kuzma is going to join us. We're also going to spend some time breaking down the Florida Panthers penalty kill. We're going to be seeing the Florida Panthers. They'll be playing against the Winnipeg Jets tomorrow evening at MTS Center, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. So we'll talk about the Florida Panthers penalty kill. It is dead last in the NHL. We'll break it down and explain to you why their penalty kill is struggling so much. All the NHL news and notes you need from around the league, and of course the playoff races in detail to start the show for the next couple segments. Before that, Richard, Ezra, good evening, gentlemen. How are you both?
Good evening, boys. Ready to get right into the playoff races. There's only 3 weeks to go, so let's get right into it.
No time to waste is what you're saying?
Right.
Richie?
No, Drew, last night's the atmosphere is getting close to playoff atmosphere. Not yet, but I think tomorrow night against Florida and then next week, I think you're really going to see the intensity in the building on the benches really ramp up.
Well, I think everybody acknowledges that there's no time for, there's no room for error anymore. I mean, on Saturday's show, we said that the Jets have to win 7 of 9 to have a decent shot at the playoffs. I'm beginning to wonder, just based on, and they've done everything they could by obviously winning the last two games. I'm beginning to wonder if they even have the buffer zone of losing two games in the next five that they play. I don't know that, in the next seven that they play. I don't know if they have that buffer zone even.
Well, you know what, Drew? 7 out of 9 we thought gave him a pretty good shot. It was no guarantee. And it is no guarantee. I think there's a couple issues. One, as he is obviously the 3-point game. And the other issue, of course, is that these teams do play each other, some of the teams ahead of them. So somebody's got to get points. The worst possible scenario is a 3-point game, you know, when you're two teams ahead of you playing each other, and you know at least there's going to be two, and then there's ends up being three. So there's all these factors here that never used to be in play before the shootout and the overtime loss. So those are all going to be, those all make it more interesting. I think in a micro level, they make it more interesting. I think on a macro level, I think what they really do is make a lot of bad teams, look okay or good for longer than they should.
Well, let's talk about the Buffalo Sabres, because you mentioned a bad team that looked okay or was still theoretically in the playoff race. I think last night finally does put an end to their playoff wishes, but that was a bad team the Jets played against last night in the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah, a couple of things struck me. Their defense is awful, and I understand that with Regier having been traded and with Jordan Leopold having been traded. But the overall defensive play I thought was lacking. Another thing is about Buffalo, and Buffalo's the 11th ranked team out of 15 in the East. I think Buffalo and everybody below them, that being Philadelphia, Tampa Bay, Carolina, and Florida, I think they're all done. I think the Jets play a bunch of those teams. But as to me, one of the biggest things I noticed was, Buffalo's playing in a game that is supposed to be a meaningful game to them if they have to run the table, essentially, to make the playoffs or close to it, like we spoke about with the Jets. They're dangling. They're putting the puck between their legs. They're passing behind the back. I mean, no urgency, and everything's fancy, nothing's mucking in the middle and dirty, and you can see on the score sheet why they can't win games.
Even though I thought Thomas Vanek played a pretty good game, it didn't really seem to give them much of a boost. But you're right, Richie, they didn't play much of a structured game or a focused game, And we made many comments throughout the game that their defense looked tired and it was unprepared. And a lot of pressure was being put on the likes of Mark Pisick and Adam mm-hmm. Pardy, guys who aren't what you'd consider elite NHL defensemen. So the Buffalo Sabres are only 4 points out of a playoff spot here, Drew. But if you want to call them out, yeah, sure, they're probably not too motivated and looking, you know, at a glass half full situation right now after that loss to the Winnipeg Jets. But realistically, you've only really got three teams that you could even say are out of it, that being the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Carolina Hurricanes, or the Florida Panthers. But really, they're not mathematically out of it. But, you know, you have a situation right now. I was talking to someone about this today. I mean, there's no Miami Heat in the NHL. So you've got, you know, three or four elite teams. And in the Eastern Conference right now, even those elite teams have injury problems. And I know we're going to get to it a little bit later, but you've got Patrice Bergeron and Sidney Crosby yep. out of the lineup. So even the elite teams in the Eastern Conference don't seem to be without question marks. Absolutely.
Well, let me interrupt you right there. And you mentioned that the elite teams in the Eastern Conference have injuries as well. The lost for the season, so the biggest of all the Crosby, we expect, and from all accounts, is going to be back for the playoffs. And Bergeron, it's unsure of when he's going to be back. But we know that Montreal is now going to be without Alexei Yemelin for the rest of the year. Defenseman, the guy best known in Winnipeg as the guy that engaged in the mm-hmm. fight with Evander Kane last week or 10 days ago, whatever that was at this point in time. Mm-hmm. How big of a loss is Alexei Yemelin to the Montreal Canadiens in terms of their hopes to get out of the Eastern Conference and make it into the Stanley Cup Finals?
He's important. Is it a backbreaker? I don't think it's a backbreaker, only because guys like P.K. Subban, who's had a great year, Andre Markov, as he stayed healthy, you know, guys on the back end, they're reliable. Josh Georges, Bouillard, the guys, you know, they may not be the best players in the league, number one, number two defensemen even, but they're veterans and they're professionals, and I think you don't necessarily see that all the time with every team, with having guys who know their roles and can pick up when they have to. Another factor to take into account, Montreal is obviously leading Boston by a point. Boston has a game in hand, but the Habs could be, you know, right now they're slated to play Ottawa in the first round. If they were to win and Pittsburgh were to win, they'd play Washington conceivably in the second round. So again, they're avoiding that Pittsburgh matchup if they stay where they are until a possible conference final. And I think Yemelin is, you know, a physical presence, can move, he can do a lot of nice things, but I think he's more important when you're playing, say, a Boston or a Pittsburgh.
Well, and I mean, that they've had a lot of success against Boston this year.
I'm not saying he's important against Ovechkin and Washington if you play them, but the first, you know, it's a loss for them, but I don't think it's an insurmountable loss. Another name we didn't mention is James Neal.
Sure.
And Jerome McGinley slots in nicely as a right winger now, playing right wing beside a guy like Evgeny Malkin. I'm not sure what they're going to do. I haven't seen that yet. So people can tweet at us if they know the solution there. But, I mean, that's a huge loss. And if you replace James Neal with Jerome McGinley, to me you're getting a little bit of a downgrade. Not a significant one, but a little bit of one. And well, so the team, you know, if he does, and a concussion is very unpredictable. So who knows what happens with Pittsburgh? I mean, there's still 3 weeks left in the season for further injuries. And Bergeron with a concussion, the same issue. Ezzy is exactly right. There is no Miami Heat, and sure, the bottom of the Eastern Conference is weak, but for the most part in the NHL, everyone can beat everyone.
Getting back to what Drew was asking about, you know, the loss of Alexei Yemelin, well, now that acquisition of Davis Drewski is really going to come in handy, because Yannick Weber has been benched by the Montreal Canadiens throughout the year, and he was a guy that was in their top six, and they've since demoted him, and they haven't been very happy with the way he's played. But Davis Drewski is a guy that was in the top six of the LA Kings last year and this year, and he was a healthy scratch after they acquired Keaton Ellerbe. So it looks like the rookie Nathan Beaulieu is the guy that's going to be recalled, and he's going to play, I believe, tonight. If Montreal doesn't play tonight, it'll be tomorrow night. I have to check that. But it's significant.
Montreal plays tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night. So Nathan Beaulieu is a guy that to keep your eye on for the Montreal Canadiens. It's one of those things, it just hurts their depth, but I think they'll be fine because Davis Drewski, he's a stay-at-home defenseman, he's fine, they like him, and he's been okay since he was acquired. So, you know, Montreal Canadiens are a team that they probably can withstand it. As far as some of these other injuries, they're more significant. Richie mentioned James Neal, and I think it's a different type of injury because, you know, we all saw Crosby. Crosby will be back for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he suffered a bad injury there, but at this point, his return is more certain. James Neal took an elbow. He's got a concussion. I mean, we know that concussions are very,
you know,
basically unpredictable. So
let me talk. Let me interrupt and shift focus a little bit. The Ottawa Senators, currently in sixth place in the Eastern Conference, 44 points. The Winnipeg Jets are 2 points behind them. Ottawa still has two games in hand. They've lost five games in a row. You know, are they, you know, how much of a chance do you think it is, or how much of a risk is it that Ottawa is going to keep their free fall going and might this dream season that had managed to stay afloat in spite of the injuries to Spezza and Carlson and Craig Anderson, is it, you know, maybe is it maybe time for them to collapse?
I mean, you know, they're 4-6 in their last 10, and you mentioned, Drew, they've lost five. But they are 2 points up on the Jets. They have two games in hand, the Jets, of course, being in ninth place. They're 4 points up on the Devils, having played the same amount of games. There's still a fair amount of buffer there. The Senators need to be able to defend and get amazing goaltending. I mean, they've allowed 88 goals against this year, which by my count is the best in the league aside from Boston and Chicago. So obviously two quality teams. Now, they don't score a lot either. I mean, you know, we talked about, as you remember when we talked about when Jason Spezza went down, what would how Kyle Turris would perform, and would that kind of be an indicator of what he's capable of? I think this has been a pretty good indicator of what he's capable of. He hasn't taken the next step there. So, you know, Corey Conacher helps. I know he's got his first one there, but the odds are still in their favor, but they need to get top-notch goaltending because they just can't score goals.
Right, Craig Anderson's coming back, and Carlson is skating, but, the Ottawa Senators, five losses in a row, all of a sudden, they look like a team that might be in trouble of just making the playoffs as opposed to a team that was going to be in the fourth or fifth seed. So, you know, it's concerning. It definitely is concerning, and it's concerning when you lose to the Florida Panthers as opposed to losing to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Mm-hmm. That's what makes it more concerning, and that's why, you know, people are looking at the Ottawa Senators as a team that, you know, is kind of slipping quickly. And it's not just the five wins in a row. It's the way they've lost. They can't score. And that's what everyone was expecting. But they've managed to win the 2-1 games, the 3-2 games, getting, you know, a goal here, a goal there. And for the large part, it's been, you know, from two or three players. And that's why they traded Ben Bishop to get Corey Conacher. They needed offense. They were pretty happy with their defense as it was constructed. But, you know, they're a team that right now they have to really pick it up, or they're going to quickly fall out of that 4th-5th spot and get into the 7th or 8th spot.
Well, yeah, you know, right now as he's sitting at 6 tied with the Islanders, 7, I mean, with a game in hand, you know, and they have less regulation wins than the Islanders, actually. The one thing is, you know, I think the season's a success even if they tank. I really do. I mean, no Cowan, no Spezza, no Carlson, Mihalik for long periods of time. I mean, injury after injury, adversity, regardless of what happens, they've developed some young players, Silverberg and Zibanejad. And you know what? I mean, these are guys that have been able to shoulder responsibility. I think that's the key in terms of development. How close are you, and did you use a season like this to develop young players? I think they've done a masterful job of that.
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
And Weir Koch on the back end, Benoit even, a little bit older guy, AHL guy. I mean, regardless of what happens, they've developed young players who then next year, like even Turris, next year goes back to their roles, and they all slot back down again. And you're looking really good. You add Conacher to that mix. Overall, it's going to be a successful season regardless. I think the cherry on top would be the playoffs, and I think the odds are still in their favor. But it's not make or break for them in terms of organizationally speaking.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll shift our focus to the Western Conference. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Welcome back to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A reminder, tomorrow morning and Friday morning, beat the box office tickets for UFC 161. Make sure your radio is tuned to The Big Show with Jay and Westwood in the morning. We're not going to mention Matty Leibel. So The Big Show with Jay and Westwood tomorrow morning, Friday morning. You can get tickets. You can win tickets. Beat the box office tickets for UFC 161, the event taking place here in Winnipeg, and a huge buzz enveloped the city today as they had a news conference announcing ticket prices and everything else. So stay tuned to TSN 1290. Beat the box office tickets for UFC 161.
You know, we just talked about the Eastern Conference. I got to give a little personal shout out to my dad here. He's in New Jersey tonight at the Bruins Devils game, so he's probably not listening. But I'm going to give him a shout out anyways because he loves the Devils. He's there at the Prudential Center tonight. And he's going to see a game, which is extremely important because the Devils, can't seem to win a hockey game, and it's going to be a good one. Playoff implications, the Jets are one of those teams that could catch the Devils for that last playoff spot. So
the Jets are ahead of the Devils right now.
Well, they're competing for the last playoff spot, right, is what I was trying to
say. Okay. Shifting our focus over to the Western Conference, and the Chicago Blackhawks have become the first team in the NHL. Pardon me, the Pittsburgh Penguins have also clinched a playoff spot. The Chicago Blackhawks have clinched a playoff spot in the Western Conference. They currently lead there.
They clinched a playoff spot when they didn't lose a game for the first 25 games.
You're absolutely right. 100% correct. Yes. But they officially clinched a playoff spot.
Yeah.
They still have not clinched their division, as it happens, mathematically, nor have they clinched the conference just yet. But they do have a five-point lead on the Anaheim Ducks and a game in hand. So they're in the driver's seat, as it were. The Detroit Red Wings. The battle really there is... There's one spot there for eighth that seems to be competitive. The Red Wings have a 2-point lead over both Dallas and Columbus. Red Wings with 43 points, Dallas and Columbus with 41 points. St. Louis and Minnesota have, you know, and San Jose and the Kings, for that matter, are all sort of bumped in there between fourth and seventh, 2 points separating those four teams. So there is sort of a gap being created between the seventh place and the eighth place in the Western Conference. Richie, you were saying off air, you expect Phoenix to still get in there? Is that what you said?
Well, I don't expect them necessarily to get in there, but I think of those final teams like Dallas, Columbus, Phoenix, Edmonton, I think Phoenix is the best shot of getting in just based on coaching and experience and the way that the team buys in. You know, you look at Detroit's schedule, Drew, and they're 43 points in 39 games. So they're 2 points up on Dallas. I think Dallas fades. They're 2 points up on Phoenix with a game in hand. But look at Detroit's schedule, and I think that's a key here. And obviously, it's the key for every team. But San Jose on Thursday at home, then they play at Chicago back-to-back. So they fly to Chicago. Not a long flight, but you're playing at Chicago. And then you're traveling to Nashville, who's desperate. Calgary, well, they've mailed it in. But then Vancouver. So you're playing, you know, San Jose, then you're playing a back-to-back. Which is the first of a four-game road trip. That's not an easy schedule for a team that has to travel quite a bit. And then you end the season. You end the season at home against Phoenix, LA, Nashville, and then you're at Dallas. So it's a bit of travel. I don't know if they're going to crumble here. I mean, great coaching, good leadership, but I think Dallas and Columbus are just pretenders at this point. Columbus is a good story. I still think Phoenix is the most professional squad and probably the most dangerous to get in.
Yeah, and they've been getting in for the last few years. I think you're right, Richie. You don't know necessarily about Phoenix. To be honest with you, I think you could flip a coin here in the Western Conference because it's so top-heavy. But I know what you're saying as far as Phoenix goes. And out of the five games tonight, I think that Phoenix-Edmonton game is almost the most intriguing. You know, we mentioned the Devils and Bruins, and then you've obviously got the Leafs and the Rangers that I believe just started. And that Jets fans will obviously be interested in that one.
You can see that game on TSN, Wednesday Night Hockey on TSN.
You've got a similar situation in the West that you do in the East with the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, you've got the Columbus Blue Jackets, Phoenix, Edmonton with nine games left. And you're going to have to go on a 6-3, 7-2 run to get into the playoffs. So, I mean, when you factor that in, and Richie mentioned the schedule, and this time of year is very important, then that's why the Jets seem to be in a better position than a lot of teams when you have the majority of your games at home against non-playoff teams. The most of the games coming up for the Jets are against non-playoff teams. But just sticking in the West here, I mean, you've got the Dallas Stars, who have won three in a row, the Blue Jackets, the Coyotes, and the Red Wings. I mean, I guess we'd put the Wild out of that because they're 3 points up on the eighth spot. But four teams, you'd have to knock out Dallas and Columbus out of those four right off the bat, because do they have a 6-3 run in them? I would say no.
That's a good question, Izzy. It's a really good question. And I think to your point, I think there's three spots available to me. I think Toronto's in. I think Toronto's going to get in. There's three spots available.
The Eastern Conference you're talking about.
There's three spots available in the East to me, and there's one spot available in the West.
Right, exactly. 6, 7, and 8, especially when you've got Ottawa sliding. I mean, you've got a situation where there's one spot available, and all of the other, I mean, St. Louis was in eighth just a week ago.
Yeah.
They've decided to you know, win a bunch of games in a row. They're a candidate to get a 4 or 5 slot. So, I mean, you're fighting the Detroit Red Wings. So what team is going to be able to pass the Detroit Red Wings? And when Richie makes the argument of the Phoenix Coyotes, it's pretty tough, because we've had Aaron Portsline on twice in the last month. Great guy. Great guest, and
covers
it's a great
the Columbus
story.
Blue Jackets.
That team is not even in the discussion if it's not for Bobrovsky.
Yep.
It's not even a discussion. I mean, you ask Aaron Portsline, and he'll tell you himself. He's stealing games. 4 shutouts this year. He's stealing games for them. And Sure. I mean, you could say, well, if he's already done it, you know, for the last 2 months, why can't he do it for another 2 weeks, 3 weeks? Well, I mean, because, you know, that's a pretty hard task to ask of your goalie, especially when he's been playing this much.
And to that point, you know, of their next five games, four are against teams that are ahead of them in the standings. St. Louis at Minnesota. They play Cali. That's the team below them. Then they play Anaheim and L.A.
Okay, so you've got Anaheim, L.A., St. Louis. Those are all teams that are jockeying for home ice, right? So those are all games that are, you'd say that they are at a disadvantage. So Columbus is in tough here.
I think.
And, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, there have been, you know, Cinderella runs by the Oilers and the Flames in the last, you know, 7, 8, 9 years. But, I mean, it's a lot to ask of a team. Columbus was in 15th. Let's not forget about that. And, I mean, they're a little bit different than St. Louis was last year. You remember the run that St. Louis went on. It's a bit of a different team here. You know, it's almost like this is a win for the Columbus Blue Jackets just to be in this position now. To ask them to actually pass a team like the Detroit Red Wings, that might be a little bit too much.
I think it's coaching, really. I think Babcock and Tippett are the best coaches of the bunch. Not to take anything away from Gullitson in Dallas and Todd Richards in Columbus and even Kruger in Edmonton. I still think those are the two best coaches of the bunch. I think those are the two teams battling it out for that final spot. Could be wrong, but that's just my opinion.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll bring in Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province to talk about the Vancouver Canucks. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus is on loan from Rick Ralph and the TSN 1290 Roundtable. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.IllegalCurve.com.
The TSN 1290 NHL Midweek Hotline.
We welcome to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290 from the Vancouver Province, our good friend Ben Kuzma. Ben, good evening. Thank you very much for joining us ahead of tonight's Canucks-Flames game in Calgary.
Not a problem, guys. I don't know if it's going to be an epic tonight, but it should be entertaining. I mean, judging by the morning skates, Flames certainly an injection of youth here, and the Canucks had a very, very, very optional skate this time of year with so many games compacted. You really don't see anybody out there who's basically playing tonight. So, you know, a bit of drama from the Canucks' perspective. Chris Higgins out with a knee strain. Having an MRI today, we haven't heard back yet how long he's going to be out. They're hopeful, at least the Canucks are hopeful, that Chris Higgins will be back for the playoffs. And Chris Tanev is out with an ankle injury. He's got his foot in a walking boot. So a couple of key players missing. And that's certainly going to challenge the Canucks, who have been basically banged up all year. I mean, they just got Ryan Kessler back. They just got Keith Ballard back. And the injury bug has bit him again.
Absolutely, Ben. We have to, before we can talk about the Canucks, unfortunately, it still is the ongoing saga between Corey Schneider and Roberto Luongo for the goaltending job. Seems Schneider's obviously taken a stranglehold
Trust me. I'm going to interrupt you here. There's no saga. There's no saga, okay? Everybody outside Vancouver, there's no saga. Corey Schneider's the starting goalie. Roberto Luongo is there as the backup, and they will move him in the offseason. They won't get as much as they wanted. They're going to have to eat some salary. There's no saga. The saga was the 48 hours leading up to the trade deadline. There's no saga now. It's kind of funny to us in Vancouver, and everybody outside of Vancouver keeps trying to come up with painting some sort of picture. There is no drama there. It's a done deal, and guess what? I mean, you're one injury away from Roberto playing a significant role in the postseason, or if Corey's game falls off, he's there. I know he should have been moved to training camp. We've talked a lot about this. Mike, I don't think Mike Gill has handled the situation very well at all. Probably more like a player agent, which he was, you know, trying to maximize that return on an asset as opposed to GM saying, when does training camp start? Let's get it done. So it's interesting because, you know, all the drama was, you know, the 10-month lead up and certainly the 2 days before the trade deadline. And now it's just a case where, you know, everything's done. It's a matter of, you know, will he play? And right now, the way Corey Schneider's playing, I can't see him giving up the crease.
Ben, we'll give that to you because we've had you on this show at least at least 10 times, and we've asked you about the Luongo saga. So we're prepared to never use that saga. We're prepared to put a moratorium on that word.
Well, I think we have to. I don't know if we can use the word saga. I mean, we'll come up with something else. I'm sure we'll be talking again before the playoffs.
Well,
so.
Ben, we have two moratoriums now. The first moratorium was on the Coyote saga, and the second moratorium now is on Luongo and Schneider. So we've reached two moratoriums on this program.
Okay. There we go.
Ben, I'm sure this isn't the first time someone's asked you this, but why not just keep Luongo and Schneider and have two good goalies? What's the percent chance that that would happen?
0.000. If you see where the cap's going next year, and you're going to tie up 9.3 and two guys as cap hits, you can't do it. There was some suggestion that was the Leafs Canucks deal ever going to get done, or was it just the Canucks being strung along by two organizations that maybe don't get along as well as some people would hope they would? And the fact that 3 minutes to the trade deadline, suddenly Ben Scrivens and 2 second-round picks became, we want you to take some cash back as well. And that was a non-starter that day, because when Luongo came off the ice, at the end of practice that day, was obviously to go to Mike Gildas's office and have a look at the offer and have to sign off on it with his no-trade clause. So, that'll play out. In the off season, and certainly, I think what you're going to find is, some teams are going to be, there's only one happy team at the draft. Everybody else is like, okay, we got knocked out in the first round, or our goaltending wasn't there. What are we going to do? So, I've always been of the mind it would probably be easier to move Roberto in the off season. Although they went, the free agent route and got Derek Roy, trying to move Luongo at the deadline and not have to take a center back. So that will play out, and we'll be using the word saga again this summer.
Ben, the Canucks acquired Derek Roy right before the trade deadline, and now that Ryan Kessler's back, all of a sudden they have an embarrassment of riches at center. First question, how would you rate Derek Roy's play so far in Vancouver, and where do you see him slotting in? Is it third-line center, or do you think he might play the wing on that second line?
No, I think he's a third line center, because last game against Phoenix, the third line was the best line by far. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, Chris Higgins in his last four games had 18 shots and a couple of goals and was playing at his best, because he actually got to play with an NHL bona fide centerman for the first time all year. And the thing about Derek Roy is, he's not big, but he's fast and he's wide. And when he gets to the blue line, he just doesn't chip and chase the puck in. He can put it through skates. He can throw that saucer pass. And there was instant chemistry on that line, because the three guys who skate extremely well. And it's really unfortunate that occurred, because, like you mentioned earlier, Kessler was a beast right off the hop in his first game back after missing 19 with a foot fracture. He might have labored a little bit, but, Ryan Kessler at 75% is probably better than most players in this league. So you have Raymond on one side, and they've got Cassian on the other. Cassian has to play in the top six. He's a wild card. They need a big body somewhere. I mean, Burrows is still going to play with the Twins, but Cassian, he skates really well, and he passes the puck well. He's just sometimes, isn't that consummate pro on and off the ice for a kid who just turned 22, but he can do some stuff. I mean, he had 5 goals in his first seven games with the Sedins at the start of the year, so they need that big body. I mean, that's why they made a pretty heavy pitch for Ryan Clough at the deadline, because they're going to need that presence. So when everybody's healthy, you mentioned the centers, and the wings are pretty good too, so they're kind of lying in the weeds, but they just have to get healthy.
Of course, the reward as of today, Ben, would be playing the streaking St. Louis Blues, which isn't necessarily a reward at all. But
there is no reward, Yeah. I mean, I was sitting here today going, the Canucks could win the division, finish 3, and draw a mini in the 6th hole.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, here we go, Or, like you said, St. Louis, or it doesn't matter. I mean, there are no easy matchups. So
there are in the East.
Well, yeah, there are.
Well, obviously, as the Canucks know from last year with the Kings. But, I caught some of that game, a large portion of that game, the Phoenix, as you mentioned, Ben. The Vancouver defense, is well-rounded, can skate, can move the puck pretty well. Watching Keith Ballard, you had mentioned he had been injured. It seems to me, with the depth up front that a lot of the teams in the Western Conference have, that the pairing of Ballard and Alberts, if that is the 5-6 pairing going to the playoffs, that will be an important group going forward, how do you see, you know, on the importance level of Keith Ballard's play, specifically Ballard, how important is he to the Canucks' overall success?
Well, he's important in the sense that, you know, they lost another right-shot defenseman in Tanev, so Ballard is a left-shot guy playing the right side with, you know, Albertson in that third pairing, and that creates all kinds of problems when, you know, just different angles and everything, and, you know, they have the same situation with Jason Garrison playing the right side as a left-shot, so people don't realize that it's a real challenge, to do that, so they're really hoping to get Tanev back. But you know, they got pretty good depth. I was surprised that they didn't take a shot at Ryan O'Byrne. You know, they could have had a right shot defenseman from Victoria for a fourth round pick. I'm a little surprised that the Canucks didn't add to their depth at the deadline. And the funny thing is, then Tanev, who's been unbelievably Gumby like and not getting hurt, and probably been their most consistent defenseman this year, is gone for at least a couple of weeks, and we'll probably find out more next week.
Yeah, Jason Garrison obviously was a BC boy brought home over the offseason, and he struggled, you know, at the outset. Ben, how has he played recently? And obviously you mentioned the adjustment to the right side, but just overall.
Yeah. Better. I think what happened with Jason is that I think a lot of people expected him to pick up where he left off in Florida. He wasn't going to score 16 goals. He was not going to score 9 on the power play. And when he had Brian Campbell setting him up last year in a pretty wide-open division. So when the offense wasn't there, when things started going south for him early, I remember a game in San Jose where, you know, the big idea there was to pair him with Edler. And on successive plays, they both coughed up the puck, and San Jose had a 2-0 lead, and then they broke up those pairings. You know, when things started not going right for him offensively, then it seemed to be a trickle-down effect. He started having trouble just moving the puck in his own zone. He's not the quickest guy. But he's been much better, I'd say, probably in the last 2 or 3 weeks, just moving the puck better. He's actually getting shots on net. He's got a heavy shot, but he was either missing guys or hitting guys in front, and he's moving better laterally along the blue line and getting what is a pretty heavy shot through. So it's an adjustment for him. I mean, you know, he had a pretty chronic groin problems in the off season there during the lockout, and, you know, when Calgary was in last Saturday, I mean, my goodness, Tanguay danced right around him and put a pretty good deke move on Schneider. So you have to make those adjustments. You know, when you're not as fleet of foot, you got to be really careful who you're paired with and who's covering up whom. So, but he's been better of late, so there's something to build on there.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. We're joined by Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province discussing the Canucks.
Ben, I know we have to be careful with expectations in Vancouver, but you look at the Canucks, they're in third place. They've won 8 of their last 10 games. They've won 3 games in a row here. They've got the division. Sure, they're fighting the Minnesota Wild for that Northwest division. And, you know, there have been some disappointments in the past few years. But is it possible that with Kessler back and the acquisition of Derek Roy, is it possible that the Vancouver Canucks are more dangerous than that they've actually been in previous years?
Well, I think they're dangerous because they're kind of lying in the weeds. I mean, everybody's talking about Chicago, and rightfully so. A lot of talk about Anaheim, and San Jose's on a roll, and, you know, the Kings are still the Kings. So nobody's really talking about the Canucks, but if they're going to go anywhere, their special teams have to come around. I mean, you can't be 29th in the NHL in the power play and go anywhere in the postseason. It's been abysmal. And this trickle-down effect started last year when they won a big game in Boston in January. And just, you know, the power play just went south. It's very predictable. It's very stagnant. It's either Henrik Sedin setting up on the half boards or this crazy drop pass through the neutral zone to try to hit somebody that's, you know, with steam coming through the blue line. But then once they gain the zone, nothing happens. They literally stand around. So that has to really right itself. I mean, they were fourth in the league in the power play last year and first overall when they went to the Cup final. So if they're going to go anywhere in the postseason, their special teams have to be a lot better. They got the goaltending, you know. If they get Higgins and Tanev back, then I think they're really dangerous. They've had to play a lot of one goal games by design because they don't have any offense and so many guys were hurt. You know, we got a little peek of it. I mean, that 2-0 game, you know, the Phoenix game, the score didn't really, you know, dictate what that game was about. You know, the Canucks were all over them. They had a 13-1 shot advantage early, and I could have easily buried him. Smith played a pretty good game. So we got a peek of it, but then the very next day we find out that Higgins is gone. So if they get healthy, they're dangerous. But like I said earlier, you know, there are no easy matchups in this conference.
Did you like that Higgins extension, Ben?
Yeah, I do, because, I mean, you know, when you go from only, you know, 1.9 to 2.5 and for 4 years, that's very cap-friendly. $2.5 million for a guy who can play third line, can play in your second line, is in your top PK pairing. And we saw here in the last while what he does with a real good center. in Derek Roy. He gets to those areas. He's got some pretty good finish. So, you know, he's 29. And I think, you know, when the Canucks got him at the trade deadline a couple of years ago, it was kind of, I think it was kind of the last shot for Chris. I mean, he'll dispute it, but, you know, maybe he's running out of chances in the league. And he's been a perfect fit. I mean, he's meshed well with the team, on the ice, off the ice. He's great in the community. He's really good for us. He's an old-school guy who gets it, understands what we do for a business. So, I would, you know, on a personal level, I'm very happy for him. I mean, four-year extension, he got the term, and the Canucks got a break on the price because of a, you know, $2.5 million cap hit. With it going down is pretty good in, you know, anybody's eyes.
Final question, Ben. In terms of expectations, you mentioned them before. Alain Vigneault, of course, you know, as the head coach, has to answer for all expectations. Do you see, you know, if there's a quick exit this year, is his job at all in jeopardy?
If there's a quick exit, should be a lot of jobs in jeopardy. I mean, this team didn't do anything last year in a five-game exit. They didn't even let, like, an assistant coach go. Mm-hmm. They didn't even let, like, the power play coach go. It was like it never happened. It was like a mirage. It was like a big divot. It was like a big mulligan. And it was kumbaya, and everybody came back and slapped each other on the back, and then away they went. To me, there has to be accountability. When you're the President's Trophy winners, and I know, you know, that they weren't prepared to not have Daniel Sedin start that series against LA. That's a coaching thing, you know, and trying to create a false sense of security, knowing you're going to have a high seed. That's coaching to me, and not being ready to play and losing your first two games at home. That's coaching to me. So, yeah, all the pressure's on Vigneault, and they're going to have to go more than a round or two for him to keep his job.
Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province, thank you very much for joining us this evening on NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and enjoy tonight's Canucks-Flames game there in Calgary.
And we'll talk saga another time.
Absolutely, Ben. Take care.
Okay,
thanks very much, bud.
Anytime. Take care.
Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Thank you to Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province for having just joined us. Great insight into the Vancouver Canucks, as always. In case you missed any of that or any of this show in its entirety, it will be available for download both on iTunes and on the TSN1290.ca website. This segment of the program is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, conveniently located at 1700 Cordon Avenue in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional style deli. Take it home or dine in their full service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been your deli destination for nearly 30 years. Check out their website at bernsteinsdeli.com, now open on Sundays at 9 a.m.
Break it down
for this Wednesday evening is going to focus on the Florida Panthers, the Jets' opponent tomorrow night at MTS Center, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290 starting at 7 p.m. The Florida Panthers' penalty kill is dead last in the NHL, 30th, with a success rate at 74.4%, which means that really a quarter of the time their opponents are scoring on the power play. I don't think you need to be a hockey expert to know that that is a bad, bad percentage. Richard, you broke down the Panthers' power play, penalty kill, rather. What did you notice? What was the most glaring point that you noticed when talking about their penalty kill?
Personnel is a big issue, Drew. You know, we talk a lot about scheme. You know, you could take some issue with their scheme, and we'll talk about that in a second. But this is just very much a personnel issue. And I think part of it is the Jets have the same problem, you know, with the guys on the penalty kill. And in Florida, you look at who they're playing on the penalty kill in terms of their back end. You know, Brian Campbell's playing a lot of minutes. You have Tyson Strachan and Campbell as a pairing. It's your second pairing on the PK. And that's not a great pairing. I mean, you know, Tyson Strachan gets running around, not the best skater. Then you have Campbell, who's a great skater, but not very good defensively and loses concentration. That's been as always been his downfall, and, you know, gets not big enough to really take the body in front of the net if that's what they're doing in front of the net on the penalty kill or along the boards. So, I mean, you know, your first pairing, you have Philip Kuba, and Eric Gudbrandsson, you know, a younger player playing big responsible minutes, PK, first unit. But Kuba, you know, Eric Karlsson made him look good last year, and he does some simple plays, but not the best skater. And so you have guys who aren't the most mobile, don't make great reads. So that's what your defense is you're dealing with. And, you know, your top forward pairing is Marcel Gauthier and Thomas Kopecky. And your second pairing, I mean, it depends on the day. And, you know, Thomas Fleischmann, you have guys like that. And overall, this team, first of all, for Jets fans should take note that tomorrow night it does not appear that Mike Weaver will be playing for Florida.
Didn't even make the trip to Winnipeg.
That was the report. So he's not making the trip. That is a colossal. If you're talking just in strictly, I don't want to overstate it here, but if you're talking strictly in terms of importance of tomorrow's game, and likely there will be a penalty, or two, or three, or four. Mike Weaver's key to what that team does, especially on the PK, and no Mike Weaver is, and that's what gets back to personnel. It's a huge loss.
Richie, we've watched the Florida Panthers quite a bit this year and last year, being in the Southeast Division, and something that, you know, stands out to me a lot is how well Mike Weaver has played, first of all. Yeah. He's a good stay-at-home defenseman, a solid stay-at-home defenseman, a guy that I think that the Jets, you know, lack, especially when they have injuries. But when you look at, you know, the personnel, we're talking about personnel here, and Eric Goodbranson in his second year, he's going to be a good defenseman. He's young. He'll be good, but he's still learning the game. And I think, if anything, when you look at the personnel, you're looking at basically one guy who is a classic penalty killer and then a lot of guys who aren't natural penalty killers. The guy I would probably say is the most natural penalty killer, and I think you know this, is Marcel Gotch. He was a penalty killer for years on San Jose.
Yep.
Played on the penalty kill in Buffalo, and he's the type of guy that they always put out on the first unit. And, you know, I think there are some similarities between the Florida Panthers penalty kill and the Jets penalty kill in that they're not overly aggressive. They have some young guys on defense. They have different personnel on forward out there, and they seem to rely too much on their goaltender, and they seem to rely a little bit too much. A thing that I noticed with Florida and the Jets, they're a type of team that, because of the lack of mobility on defense, when a team decides to establish themselves, get a forecheck going, dump and chase, and they're in their own zone for too long, whether it's 45 seconds to a minute, they have a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
The Jets seem to play a lot better. And you know, last night's game was a perfect example. The Buffalo Sabres didn't have a lot of zone time on the Jets. You know, they had chances, and they got their chances, and Pavlik had to be good. That's why he was the second star. But the Jets and the Panthers are both teams that aren't the best defensive teams, and they're at their worst, it seems, when they're standing around and they're hemmed in their own zone. And, you know, for the Jets, who have one of the worst power plays, or at the very least, they're in the bottom third.
They're the second last in the NHL. The only team worse than the Jets on the power play, last night's opponents, the Buffalo Sabres.
There you go. And tomorrow, that's going to be a key. I mean, when you're playing a weak opponent and a team with a weak penalty kill, a team like the Jets can take advantage of it. Unfortunately, Tobias Enstrom probably won't be in the lineup, and he's a key guy in the power play.
Yeah, Tobias Enstrom day-to-day tomorrow, day-to-day for the Winnipeg Jets, didn't practice today. It was an optional skate. My hunch, and this is strictly only a hunch, is that the Jets will hold him out of tomorrow's game, and that way he almost gets a whole week off to recover from really the hit he took yesterday at the hands of Steve Ott.
Back to Florida, I mean, I didn't look at the ice time before, because when I was looking at the video, breaking it down, Mike Weaver, 331 per game on the PK. I mean, he plays 19 a game, 331 on the PK. Just really important. Jovanovski was playing 241 before he went down.
Hasn't played most of the season.
So you're already looking at your top two guys in the PK, gone. So it's personnel. Now, in terms of the scheme,
yeah,
quickly want to talk about that. I mean, as you mentioned, they're not going to be the most aggressive team, Florida. They do collapse low. When the puck moves low, they collapse pretty low, meaning they leave the points open for shots. So if the Jets are able to utilize, you know, guys at the point like Byfuglien or Bogosian, both have big shots, that could be something to take advantage of.
So what you're saying is the two forwards on the penalty kill don't, you know, once the Jets or whoever's playing Florida, once they set up, they'll give up the shot.
Yeah.
And to prevent the mucking in front of the net.
Yeah, I'm like that to make up for some, you know, as he talked about, lack of mobility and some bad reads. So, yeah, they do collapse quite low. A fair amount of teams do that. The other thing to take into account, Drew, is when we talk about mobility is rotations. And what you'll see a lot is, you know, when teams play, a lot of teams will play this 1-3-1 we've talked about on the show before, which means a defenseman in the middle of the blue line, a forward, you know, three forwards maybe across, if you look at it like a T, and then a forward in front of the net.
Mm-hmm. Okay, three forwards sort of at the, yeah, somewhere around the, one in the slot, in the high slot, and then one sort of around the face-off dots, or one on each side of the face-off dots.
What'll happen in terms of Florida is if you move them around, You know, if you're playing a team and you're playing a power play and you have, and the team's playing, you know, what they call the box, right, a regular box, mm-hmm. a lot of times when there's a lot of movement on the power play, on the offensive team, by the offensive team, what happens is, you know, the forward covering the guy at the point, if the guy at the point starts moving, the forward will follow him. And then it'll kind of move into the shape of a diamond, or the forwards will switch sides because they don't want to give the defenseman a lot of room.
So the defense, which had been set up in a box in their ideal setup, has to change their formation sort of to a diamond shape.
To adapt, exactly. So what happens there, though, is that's all about rotation. So if the offensive team moves the puck to the side, essentially the weak side, where the where the forward was following him from.
The half wall sort of area?
Yeah, kind of that area. Lots of times teams will employ their defensemen to move up, to rotate to that guy. So to play that part of the diamond, essentially. If you view it as a diamond, the defenseman will rotate up to kind of close to the hash marks to play the forward, to the opposing forward. And if you're Florida, if you follow me here, if you're Florida and you have a guy, you know, like Campbell who scrambles a bit, or a guy like Strachan who takes a while to get there. Even Gudbrandsson, you know, bigger guys.
Kuba, not the greatest skaters.
Kuba, you get the rotation, you end up having a gap of about a second, a half a second, which is a lot in NHL time, where you can get a good shot at net. And even if you get a good shot at net and don't score, the defenseman's trying to get to you, and then he's already out of position if there's a rebound or anything like that. So the passing, taking advantage of maybe Florida's slow rotations at times.
Well, with those slow rotations, yeah. Would it allow the Jets easier passes into the seam? Sort of like how you saw Bufflin to Gagnon last night?
Somewhat, but the seam depends on how far back they play in terms of, you know, if they drop. They're not awful at protecting the seam. And to be honest with you, the Jets aren't great at that pass anyways. They don't really have a guy who can make that pass a lot. You know, Bufflin made it yesterday, skating down the right side, but overall they don't station him there on the power play, you know, kind of on the low half boards, right?
The problem that the Jets have had really from the start is they don't, besides Tobias Enstrom, yeah. they don't really have a natural distributor on the power play.
Well, Bufflin too, those two.
Fine, Bufflin too, but I mean, yeah. they like Bufflin's, I mean, Bufflin at the point with his shot.
Right, exactly. So that's the issue. So in terms of, if you can make passes, and you can take advantage of the rotations and take advantage of the fact that they collapse down low at times, you can get some good opportunities. And there's one other key, and you mentioned it earlier. They don't have great goaltending, and they say that's the best penalty killer. So there's a lot of holes in this squad, and there's a lot of injuries. So
right, and we'll see if the Jets can adapt to that. I mean, you've got no Mike Weaver back there. Jovo hasn't been back there all season. The Panthers have an awful penalty kill, as we've documented here. You have to think that the Jets, you know, should take advantage of that. And, we've talked about it on the show before. The Jets have struggled on the power play for a variety of reasons, whether it's quick puck movement, it's personnel, it's having, you know, a quarterback of the power play and having the ability to switch it up. You know, I think a lot of it has to do with predictability, guys. I think, you know, teams know that Bufflin is going to load up on the point, and they know that, you know, Ladd isn't the best stick handler. They know that the Jets are short on natural playmakers. And as we've talked about on the show before, guys, you got to have playmakers at all positions on the power play. It's not just the point. You want to have guys that can move the puck, you know, down low as well. But, you know, there's no reason to believe that tomorrow night, Drew, the Jets get a couple power plays, they should be able to score a couple goals, and that'll be huge because you have to think that the Florida Panthers right now at this point are playing the role of spoilers. Mm-hmm. I don't expect it to be a high-scoring game tomorrow, by the way. I think people are maybe listening, you know, thinking we're talking about whether it's Clemenson or Theodore, but it's probably going to be a low-scoring game. And in a low-scoring game, what really, you know, stands out more? It's the special teams. If you have a couple of power play opportunities when the game's tight, you don't take advantage, well, then that comes to bite you. As my Devils are just getting murdered right now, 3-0. But, you know, that's one thing that the Jets really can, it can be a key for them. It really can.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll do a score update from around the NHL, and we'll talk about Jean-Sébastien Giguère throwing his teammates, rightfully or, if you think wrong, under the bus in Colorado. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Down 1 hour to go. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. score update from around the NHL, because Jets fans certainly are scoreboard watching tonight, and really every night that the Jets don't play. At the end of the first period at Madison Square Garden, the Toronto Maple Leafs 0, the New York Rangers 0. The Leafs, of course, probably Jets fans are rooting for the Leafs based on the how the standings work out there, hoping that the Rangers lose a game tonight. In New Jersey, the Boston Bruins, on the strength of two shorthanded goals, are defeating the New Jersey Devils 3-0 halfway through the first period. Ezzy, your dad, as a big Devils fan, is probably not enjoying what he's seeing. If I'm not mistaken, and don't quote me on this or it's not gospel, but I believe the Bruins were stopped on a penalty shot, which occurred while they had while they were on a 5-on-3 disadvantage.
Yeah,
so it's rare that you see a team get a breakaway 5-on-3 and a penalty shot as a result of that breakaway.
Yeah, Jets fans will remember us being scored on a 3-on-5. That brings back bad memories. But Johnny Boychuk didn't score on the penalty shot, but it was a 5-on-3 in the Devils. I mean, this is an absolutely crucial game. They've fallen out of it, and, you know, they're in a very difficult position. Kovalchuk is still a little ways away, and they're having a lot of trouble scoring goals. Hedberg is injured, so Keith Kincaid is their backup. But you talk about, you know, teams with problems right now and looking like teams that aren't going to be a big test for the Jets for that last playoff spot. You have to think of the Devils. Like right now, I mean, it's really the Rangers and the Islanders that I think are a lot more dangerous, with the Devils, you know, sliding like this.
I believe if they lose tonight, that will be 8 losses in a row for the Devils. Granted, they
got a bunch of shootout points.
They have got a bunch of shootout points there, but that will make it eight
winless
losses.
Yep.
Or, winless in 8 games for the New Jersey Devils if the Bruins are up 3-0. So I think you're pretty safe to say that they're probably going to win that game.
They've always paid goalies. You've mentioned this before, as you have to wonder if Luongo fits in there eventually.
Well, you know, Brodeur had the injury problems, and Hedberg has faltered, and they didn't address it at the trade deadline. Neither did Carolina. And look at what's happened. Both of those teams have fallen big time. And to me, you know, I know we're going to get to Jaguar quickly, Drew, but to me, with no Kovalchuk, you lost Parise. Zajac has had an off year after, you know, coming off the injury last year, and they just haven't gotten the scoring. Clarkson hasn't been able to keep it up. Henrik has struggled. So it's, you know, all those things were a recipe for disaster for New Jersey.
Speaking of recipes for disaster, the Colorado Avalanche are a complete and utter disaster. Monday night, they lost at home to what you would describe as an equally woeful Calgary Flames team. They lost 3-1 on home ice on Monday night. After that game, J.S. Jaguar, the Colorado Avalanche goaltender, had the following to say.
We have to put our head into the game. You know, some guys are more worried about their Vegas trip at the end of the season than playing the games, the remaining of the games. You know, quite frankly, I don't care about your Vegas trip right now.
Damning comments from a professional goaltender to his teammates. You know, I tend to believe that Jean-Sébastien Guerre is probably correct in what he says, given that he is in that dressing room and he knows the attitude of that dressing room. Was he wrong for making these comments publicly?
I don't know if he was wrong or if he was right. I really don't. But, you know, when you talk about throwing your teammates under the bus, well, Jean-Sébastien Jaguar, didn't throw his team under the bus. He was driving the bus, and he drove over all of his teammates on that one. That was, you know, great sound clip, Remo. But, you know, when you're talking about a guy being frustrated or just completely, you know, demoralized by the way his team's playing in front of him, that's Jean-Sébastien Jaguar. I mean, the Colorado Avalanche have won one game out of their last 10. They're in last place. And, you know, you talk about the race for last place. Well, Colorado's, you know, quickly winning that one with, you know, 3 weeks to go in their regular season. So, you know, whether he's right or wrong, I don't know. But, I mean, he certainly is going to make it difficult for himself going forward. I don't know how Jean-Sébastien Jaguar, able to get through the rest of the season, let alone come back next year on the Colorado Avalanche, knowing that he's basically called out, you know, a good portion of the room. I don't think for a second, by the way, that he's singling out one or two guys. I think he's singling out a bunch of guys.
When you're 12-22-5 and you're 1-8-1 in your last 10, and you have a Conn Smythe goaltender on your roster, isn't that the guy to call out his teammates? Hasn't he earned that right in the course of his career?
Well, let's talk about something for a second here. And at the beginning of the year, you guys disagreed with me, but I said that Greg Sherman and Joe Sakho were two guys that I thought were on the hot seat, and I thought, you know, they were the first guys that I thought should get fired. So what's happened this year?
We disagreed with you?
Yeah. Well, are you sure we disagreed with you on
that? I was a little bit more strong on it. I'm not going to go back and look up the audio, but if you look at what's happened this year, I don't understand how one of them or both of them don't get axed this year for the way the team has performed on the ice. I mean, Ryan O'Reilly was brought in. I mean, has Ryan O'Reilly done anything? Yeah, sure. He's picked up some points here, but I mean, the team has just completely mailed it in. And sure, they've had some issues on defense and all that, but I mean, these guys have mailed it in. And, you know, to me, you're looking at a goaltender who's getting put out to dry here. And, you know, of course he's going to be frustrated. Did he go a little bit far? Sure. But, I mean, is he entitled to it? Probably. He probably is.
Important to note that Matt Duchene basically supported his comments and said, you know, he agreed with what J.S. Chigarit to say. A little bit of emotional fight. Clearly, he thinks the team's mailed it in. Organizationally, if you look at the team on a go-forward basis, I do agree with both of you that Greg Sherman and Joe Sakho are likely on their way out. It's an appealing job if you look at the fact that they may have a top five pick this year. Especially a top three would be quite appealing.
They could have had two top five picks if they didn't match Ryan O'Reilly.
Richie, what's the direction in Colorado? I mean, where did they go this year? They just went right to the bottom.
But I'm saying, you know, for the next guy, I agree that there's no direction with this group. But if you look at the team on a go forward basis, Stasny's faded off. But Stasny, O'Reilly, Landeskog, Duchene, and pieces like Downey and Parenteau and Jones. And then their defense is pretty bad, but you still do have some pieces. And then, you know, you look at the back and between the pipes, and you can say what you will. But you add in theory, Nathan MacKinnon or Seth Jones or Jonathan Drouin, and you say, well, hold on a second. Duchene, Landeskog, and MacKinnon. It's like a pretty good top line to me. I'll take that job.
Yeah.
So the job's not going to be hard to fill if they end up cleaning house, but I think they need to clean house. And, you know, the way the team's playing right now and the comments made by J.S. Giguere, I think say a lot about Coach Joe Sakho, unfortunately. And I think they say a lot about him because I think when a player speaks out that way, he's trying to get his team's attention. He's trying to get his teammates' attention.
Something the coach probably hasn't been able to do.
Exactly. And that's, to me, it's an indictment of Joe Sacco's ability to control the team and to get his message across. And it's unfortunate, but I think they're all in their last days there in Colorado. I don't think the team Sakho was given was very good. But I think him not having the ears of the guys in the room clearly falls on the player's shoulders as a responsibility there, but it's also a responsibility on the coach to get his message through to those players, and he didn't.
But guys, you know, TSN has been talking a lot about this, both on radio and on TV. And, you know, I find it funny that in this day and age that guys aren't able to say this without, you know, having all of this criticism. I mean, Jean-Sébastien Giguère is saying what everybody else wants to say, except for maybe the guys that actually don't care as much about whether they win or lose based on this point of the season. I mean, it's not like Jean-Sébastien Giguère singled out one guy.
Right.
Yes, of course, he's saying that there are several players that might be, you know, there might be a group of players. But, I mean, first off, the Las Vegas thing, I mean, is metaphorical. I don't think he actually is saying that guys are going to Las Vegas.
I think he's being 100% literal there.
If he is being literal, then I don't think that's the main point of this. The main point of this is he's criticizing the effort level. It's not that guys are looking forward for their vacation.
Oh.
It's that he's criticizing their effort level, and that could be as much as 10 players on the team, the way this team is playing. But why can't he say this? I mean,
I agree.
It's not like he's insulting someone's mother here. I mean, he's trying to get more out of his teammates. And when, like you said, Drew, you've won one game in 10. I mean, in today's NHL, to win one game of 10 is pathetic.
Most importantly, I'd like to know who's going to Vegas, because there's clearly, if there are guys going to Vegas, and if it's not metaphorical, you know exactly what he's talking about.
A lot of people are going to be changing their trips, I think.
Explain what you mean by that.
Well, he talks about people more concerned about their Vegas trip. Who are the guys going to Vegas? They're more concerned about the Vegas trip than playing.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You're saying after the fact you see who went to Vegas and you can put two and two together at that point.
We'll put Remus by the door. You know, the old Scotty Bowman trick? I don't know if you guys heard this.
Yeah,
story.
The one where he'd hide behind, getting the guys to sign the stick when they come back.
Yeah, he would have one of the hotel employees stand as a security by all the hotel rooms. And what he would do is, at the end of the night at past 11 o'clock, if that was curfew, we'd have the security sit on a chair and, you know, secure that area, you know, all the, with all the rooms being past that point. And what the security guard would do, what Bowman would have the security guard do, and it worked well for both sides, is he'd have the security guard hold a stick, and the security guard would ask the players who came in after 11 to autograph the stick. And then Bowman would come back at the end of the night and see who had autographed the stick, and then he knew who stayed out past curfew. The security guard got a autographed Montreal Canadiens stick, and the Montreal Canadiens guys got a hard skate.
Yeah, and Al Strachan tells that story in one of his books, and Scotty Bowman was the best head coach of all time, and there's a reason for that.
Absolutely.
Before we quickly go to break, an update from Madison Square Garden in New York. The Toronto Maple Leafs, Phil Kessel, has scored for the Leafs. They lead 1-0, 5 minutes into the second period, and they have a power play right now, so a chance to expand on that lead potentially.
If you're a Jets fan.
I know. It feels weird cheering for the Leafs, but if you're a Jets fan, you just say, go Leafs, go tonight. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. To my left, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Producer Remus is getting us on and off the air. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.IllegalCurve.com.
Six things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. Six.
We start six things we learned this week with Richard Pollock. We spoke about it with Ben Kuzma in the interview that we did about 45 minutes ago there about Richard Pollock. Keith Ballard will be an important part of the Canucks' success, if there is any, in the playoffs.
You know, and I asked Ben about that earlier, Ben Kuzma, the Vancouver Province, in the first hour, as you just mentioned, Drew. You know, Keith Ballard is a talented player and just hasn't put it together for whatever reasons. Yeah, discipline and maybe some hockey sense issues and things like that. The guy can skate. He can move the puck pretty well first pass-wise, and he can hit. He's actually more physical than people give him credit for. If the Canucks are to be successful, I think, in the playoffs, it's, you know, you look at the top teams. I think that's what you have to look at. If you're Vancouver, you're going to have to go through Chicago or through Anaheim or through L.A., St. Louis, Detroit, all those teams. They all have depth. They all have depth, three-line scoring, for the most part. Some are more top-heavy than others, but if you're going to win in the National Hockey League and make a four-round run, you're going to have injuries, which is going to elevate players into different roles. And even if you don't, your top six, your bottom two guys are going to have to shoulder a fair amount of responsibility. Sure, maybe 10 minutes a night, but those 10 minutes are vital. And I think he's going to be a key for a team that's really obviously struggled in the power play, but is really defensively successful, the way they've changed their style a little bit. This team is really built around the defense. I mean, the Sedins are the Sedins, but that top four and Schneider's what makes them go. So they needed to have the bottom two getting them going, and then obviously production through the middle.
Five.
Ezra Ginsberg, the Minnesota Wild have enough depth at the wing position to compensate for the loss of Danny Heatley for the rest of the season.
Well, we all, you know, found out about this last night up in the press box, you know, during the Jets game about Danny Heatley. It was first announced that they weren't sure if he was going to be out because of that surgery, but now he's going to be out for the season. And, you know, the first thing that pops into most people's mind is, okay, you know, that's 11 goals. That's a former 50-goal scorer. That's somebody who's out of the lineup now. That's a big deal. But if you look at it, you know, they acquired Jason Pominville, and they have one of the best top lines in the hockey with Parise, Koivu, and Pominville. And you look at that second line, that's where Heatley was usually, but sometimes he was on the third line. But you've got Pierre-Marc Bouchard and Devin Setoguchi there on the wings in between Michael Granlund, who they've had to call up because of the injury to Matt Cullen. Matt Cullen was playing second-line center, a position that they probably didn't want him in. But as far as the Minnesota Wild go, you've got a team that has really peaked at the right time. And I, you know, the first thing that came up to my mind, and that's why I included this as one of my three things I learned this week, if you actually look at it, they've got quite a bit of a depth there. And a guy like Charlie Coyle, you know, he's a young guy, but, you know, on the third line, it's a good position for him to be in, playing with Kyle Brodziak. And then you've got Cal Clutterbuck, you know, providing the grit of that line. So I think, you know, you take the 11 goals out of the lineup and someone has to step it up. Pierre-Marc Bouchard, you know, has struggled big time this year. But he's a guy that I think can, you know, get it going. He's got a scoring touch. So I think, you know, they'll miss Heatley, but I think the Wild will be good. And I think, you know, they're a team that I wouldn't want to play in the first round in the West.
Four.
Richard Pollock, Jay Bouwmeester, and Alex Pietrangelo are going to be a formidable foe for any opposing team's top line in the playoffs.
Yeah. What can they do? Maybe not the most physical pairing, but that's probably the best skating duo in the league. They can move the puck. Pietrangelo's might be a top five defenseman. And Jay Bouwmeester is able to complement his game. He's not the best defenseman on that pairing, and I think that's exactly what the role he should be employed in. He can skate, move the puck, play a lot of minutes, play measly for the just so economical out there. That pairing is arguably the best in the game right now, Drew. And if you're going to be St. Louis, and you know we talk about matchups, St. Louis right now, and this will change, but St. Louis right now is going to play the Vancouver Canucks. And Bouwmeester and Pietrangelo will be matched up against the Sedins. And the Sedins aren't the fastest pairing out there. You know, they have great vision, and they utilize the cycle better than anybody to create space. But they'd have a tough time against that group in terms of their skill level and their skating ability. So watch out for that pairing, because I think we're going to be hearing about that pairing. I think they're going to sign Bouwmeester likely on, you know, after the season, even though he's got one more year. And that pairing could be successful for a long time.
Three.
Ezra Ginsberg, Cody Franson has been a steadying presence on the Leafs' blue line this season and has emerged as a bona fide top four NHL defenseman.
And he was a top four defenseman on the Nashville Predators, but I've always talked about this guy to Richie. He's from the same hometown as Shea Weber, Sikkimoose, BC. I've always liked Cody Franson, and I think that, you know, he's had an underrated season. He's a guy that's 25. He came into the league with the Nashville Predators, and, you know, he was obviously overshadowed by Weber and Suter. But, you know, he's a really good defenseman. He's not, you know, the most offensively talented. He's more of a stay-at-home type. But he's a massive guy, and he's physical. And, you know, the Leafs are playing the Rangers as we speak right now, you know, and the Leafs are doing a pretty good job of shutting down the Rangers. Mind you, a lot of teams have shut down the Rangers. But Cody Franzen is a guy that I really like, and I think, you know, he's one of those underrated guys. You've got Phaneuf and Gunnarsson, and they were there last year, and those are, you know, your top pairing, as the Rangers score, of course.
I tell you, but Cody Franzen was on the ice. You criticize the Rangers,
yeah, you ask, you
and
know,
the just, Rangers score a goal to tie it 1-1
exactly,
against the Leafs.
That's just how it works. But you ask Randy Carlyle, a former Norris winner, he'll tell you that he loves Cody Franzen, and he's been a pillar of that defense this year.
On that point, you know, he's offensively talented. I mean, he's got a good shot. He can move the puck. The downside, and I like how you pointed this out, because I think Franzen's an underrated player, and I thought that was a good acquisition by Toronto in taking on Lombardi, and, you know, as part of that deal.
Yeah, that was the reward for taking on Matthew Lombardi.
But, you know, his skating isn't great, but you mentioned his physicality. I don't think he gets enough credit for it. He plays a physical game. He plays a mean game. And, you know, it's almost, he kind of reminds me a little bit of a more offensively talented Luke Shen, not as defensively talented, but, you know, you give and take a little bit. He's got some parts to his game like that in terms of their style to me. Yep. So I like what they've done with his game, and I do think he's an underrated player.
He wasn't on the ice for that goal the Rangers just scored, right?
I think he was.
Oh, okay.
That's what made it so funny.
He's a right side guy. That was a left side goal.
Two.
Richard Pollock, the Buffalo Sabres need to add some size and aggressiveness up front if they want to turn it around next season.
You know, you see the acquisition in the offseason of trading Derek Roy for Steve Ott, and you say, well, that's quite a bit of a skill, you know, for a little bit of a lot of things. And Steve Ott, you know, criticize him as you will. He can win draws. He can play wing or center. He can, you know, get in your face and, you know, 15-goal scorer kind of thing. But they need more players, not just Steve Ott players. They need more skill players who have size. Their game's on the perimeter. And skill players with size is fine because, you know, in terms of the perimeter play that they have right now, you'll say, okay, well, they need more skill players with size. And I want to go one step further because you have Thomas Vanek, and he's big. And you have Drew Stafford, and he's pretty big. Now, you have Gerby, and you have Ennis, Drew, and you have Hodgson, smaller guys. But Vanek and Stafford are big guys who don't play big to me. And you need to add size, need to add aggressiveness, and you need to add a willingness to go to the front of the net and skill. Those four components. Because I think aggressiveness and willingness to go to the net aren't necessarily tied together all the time. You know, picking out
certain name of a guy they need? I mean, lots of, you know, Ryan Clough type is a guy that they need. There's other players out there that can fill that role. But you can't win in the NHL by playing on the perimeter all game. And you certainly can't win when your big guys who are skilled don't go to the net. And I think Blake Wheeler, for Jets fans to reference, he plays best when he goes to the net,
yep,
when he's streaking down the right or the left side. When he plays on the perimeter and curls back like he does a lot, nothing happens in the day and age. In the NHL now, you can't do the curl back move at the hash marks because the forecheckers, the back checkers are coming back. So you can't do that. So for the Sabres to be successful, I mean, they have pieces in the system now from the trades, you know, Palminville trade,
yep,
getting a first rounder for Gostad, all that stuff. But they have to put an emphasis on a more rugged, talented offensive player. Otherwise, they're doomed.
We'll wrap up six things we learned this week. Ezra Ginsberg, with the exception of the Jack Adams Trophy, this might be the most wide-open year for NHL award finalists in a very long time.
I think the Jack Adams itself is actually pretty wide open. I would just think that you got to put Michel Therrien and Paul McLean and even Randy Carlyle in there. You can debate other guys, too. Jack Capuano, maybe, if the Islanders make the playoffs. So that's not wide open. But, you know, I mentioned...
Why did you write that, then?
I mentioned... I know. Well, I'm thinking about it now. It's not that wide open. But I'm talking about the nominees aren't even wide open for the other awards. And when was the last time you had this many question marks for every major trophy?
Mm-hmm.
Look at the Hart Trophy. Okay, well, Sidney Crosby. Well, is he going to get it now that he's missed all these games? Well, who else is there? I would say that Alexander Ovechkin has emerged as a serious Hart candidate, the way he's played and taking over the goal-scoring lead.
They were having this conversation on the Big Show this morning. Yeah,
right, and I think it's a good conversation to have. Well, what about Boston? Well, Bergeron's injured. I mean, go down all of the top teams. Chicago, is it Taves or Kane? I mean, Getzlaff on Anaheim, is he a Hart winner? I mean, and then you go to other trophies. You go to the Vezina Trophy, and I would say that probably Carey Price and Tuukka Rask are the top two candidates right now. But you've got other guys like Sergei Bobrovsky, Corey Schneider, Ray Emery, even though he's played less games than Corey Crawford. I mean, you go up and down all the list. The Norris Trophy, is P.K. Subban the favorite? I mean, it's not that crazy to say that. I mean, in this shortened season, I think this is going to be one of the best years ever for awards because it's completely wide open, and you're going to have so many great races, and a lot can change in the last 3 weeks. So that's why I wanted to bring that up, because I think it's one of the most wide-open years in a long time.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. When we come back, we're going to look at the prospect situation of the San Jose Sharks. Shortly after 7:30 p.m., welcome back to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A reminder that beat the box office tickets for UFC 161 tomorrow and Friday with the Big Show with Jay and Westwood, so you can tune into that. As well, we'd encourage you to follow us on Twitter. You can do that at TSN 1290 Radio, and you can also follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/TSN Radio 1290, because tomorrow we will be giving out the pre-sale password for UFC 161 tickets. So we encourage you to follow TSN 1290 on Facebook and Twitter. Get that UFC 161 pre-sale code, and you'll be able to score your tickets to that great event coming to Winnipeg later on this summer.
Prospect Pulse.
Prospect Pulse on this Wednesday evening focuses on the San Jose Sharks. And as we always do, we welcome to NHL Midweek, he's the director of amateur scouting for Veritas Hockey, good friend of ours, Kyle Kozier. KK, how you doing, bud?
Hey, very well. How you guys doing?
We're doing well on this Wednesday evening. Thank you very much. Kyle, we're going to talk about the San Jose Sharks, and as we've been going in order from 30th down in the NHL, the San Jose Sharks certainly fall as one of the teams that are lacking in terms of prospects. You know, why is the Sharks prospect pool so shallow right now? Has it been a bunch of trades, some poor drafting on their part, or is it just a combination of both?
I think, you know, it might be actually a combination of both. You know, for a few years now, they've been, you know, making deals to bring guys in and, you know, sending out, you know, both draft picks and higher, you know, highly rated prospects, guys like Charlie Coyle, of course, went to the Wild, and that Brent Burns deal. And so there's just a bunch of deals like that where they're, you know, a lot of guys talk about, you know, window to win, and of course, San Jose's is, you know, still open a craft, but not quite what it used to be a few years ago. So I think that, you know, Doug Wilson was trying to, you know, get the best value he fits, try and win a Stanley Cup. And, of course, in today's NHL, sometimes that means dealing your picks and prospects. They kind of just put themselves in a crunch there where they're dealing out their both draft picks and they're good prospects, and it's caught up to them here.
Kyle, what's their organizational philosophy, if there is one, in terms of drafting? Do they focus more on NCAA, more on the CHL? Are they balanced? Is it Europe? What do they look at?
They really seem to have a fairly balanced approach. You know, if you look at their lineup as constituted right now, of course, not all the guys are, original Sharks picks, but kind of a nice blend of CHL and NCAA. And, of course, they're not shy about going to Europe either. And we'll sort of look at some of the out-of-the-way places, which a lot of teams have to do now to, find those late-round gems, especially in a cap world here, to can't really leave any stone unturned. And, of course, San Jose has been doing a pretty good job of that. And of course, this year with some of the guys they sent out that they're bringing back in those second-round picks. So hopefully those good years of scouting will be able to dash and change for them at the draft now.
KK, if we can just go move to players right now, I want to start off by asking you about I should preface this by saying I took a little bit of heat from you over a Saskatchewan-related tweet that I had a couple of days ago, but I want to start off with a guy that's from Wilcox, Saskatchewan. He's got a brother that plays for the St. Louis Blues, Rylan Schwartz. He signed with the San Jose Sharks earlier last week, and he's a guy that Richie and I had an opportunity to see last year playing for Colorado College. He led the NCAA in points this year with Colorado College. Is he a guy at 23 years old that can step into the lineup for the Sharks next year?
Yeah, I really see no reason why not. For several years, there's sort of always been the impression that he was sort of riding his younger brother's coattails. And, of course, this year he really had a breakthrough season, put up 50-some-plus points for Colorado College, plays center. Not the biggest guy. I think he's about a 5'11 and 185, 190, something like that, but extremely tenacious. He's hard on the puck, very, very strong. So even though he doesn't necessarily have the height, he's extremely strong, very hard to knock off the puck, good on faceoffs, and he can penalty kill. So even if San Jose doesn't envision him in that offensive role, there's a bunch of other things he can do. So really no reason why he can't step on the lineup and do well there. I think he's played one game in Worcester so far and picked up a point already. And from all accounts, he played well there. So I'm sure that's what San Jose was thinking. And, of course, he's the right age, too, at 23 or 24. Even if he plays near the bottom of the roster, it's not really going to hurt him developmentally. He's probably where he's going to be. And so probably a nice fit for San Jose that way.
Kyle, moving to the back end of Sharks prospects, a guy who's actually from California, so he's sort of a local boy for the San Jose Sharks, is Matt Tennyson. He was also another college free agent signed by the San Jose Sharks. He played at Western Michigan University, where his head coach is a guy familiar to a lot of people around these parts. Andy Murray was his head coach at Western Michigan. He's played some games. He played, I believe, three games for the Sharks already this year. Is he an answer sort of long-term for the Sharks blue line, given that they're getting a little bit long in the tooth with a guy like Dan Boyle, who's expected to be not be long for San Jose?
Yeah, I actually had seen him play a little bit in the USHL, and came out of the North American League, a year in the North American League, year in Cedar Rapids, and moved on to Western Michigan. Really kind of a guy at one time was thought to be more of the stay-at-home type, but developed a bit of the offensive game in his last couple of years at Western Michigan. So has a few different tools at his disposal. Plays also a fairly robust game. Doesn't put up a lot of penalty minutes, but is fairly tough as well. He's north of 6'2", about 205, 210 maybe. Again, probably looking a guy that's playing in that 4-5-6 slot in terms of a defenseman, but not going to hurt. He moves reasonably well for a big guy. He's got that right-handed shot, which is obviously quite valuable at that level. And it's really no reason why he can't just like talked about Schwartz there. He's 24, so certainly no reason why he can't kind of fill a role for San Jose, especially with the departure of Murray and some of the other issues they have going on age-wise.
Talk about college free agents, and they're becoming, as Kyle, very important, as you mentioned before, in terms of developing an organization, because nobody wants to leave a stone unturned. Another college free agent that the Sharks have signed is Travis Oleksuk. He's a left winger. Went to Minnesota Duluth in the Western Collegiate Hockey Association. Can you talk about his game and maybe what you see as a possible ceiling for him?
Yeah, kind of an interesting kind of guy. Probably projects to be a little bit more of that two-way, maybe a third-line center. On a Duluth team that's really pretty skilled, he's one of the guys that was there in recent years that had a little bit of grit to his game. Played that, you know, he's from Thunder Bay, so sort of the good old Canadian boy that Don Cherry would like. And so, again, I think one of the themes you see with some of the forwards that San Jose currently has, he's a little bit of grit, you know, probably doesn't project to be maybe a top six, but certainly can fill a role for them. You know, offensively, he kind of took a little bit of time for him to bloom, but again, you know, when he got to be a senior there at, or near the end of his career at Duluth, the point started to come. Now, you know, whether that's a function of him being, you know, older than some of the other guys he's playing against, or maybe just a late bloomer, you know, early to tell, but again, certainly a guy that you could put into the lineup and probably is not going to hurt you, and best case scenario, he starts chipping in a few points here and there too.
You know, looking through this, the depth charts in terms of the prospects for the Sharks, Kyle, you know, there are a few college free agents. Does that say more about their eye for those college free agents and ability to sign them, or more about the organization's lack of depth in terms of top prospects?
Well, I think that, you know, as we discussed at the top of the segment here, you know, sending out so many picks and prospects really kind of left them in a situation where they, you know, have very little depth prospect-wise, and we're almost forced to look at some of these guys. And, you know, you look at a guy like just recently signed, like Uriah Hayes, who was, you know, passed over several times, and you know, even Electric was, I think, eligible for the draft in 07 and didn't sign the stage until, you know, 2012. So, you know, guys that have sort of slipped through the cracks somewhat, but, you know, San Jose has been forced to go out and again, talk about the no stone unturned, take a chance on some of these guys that other teams have passed on. And, you know, if it works out, great. If not, they're really not out of draft pick or anything. But I sort of applaud them for taking a chance on some of these guys. You might find that, you know, mythical late bloomer and really get some value for your money there.
You're listening to TSN 1290. You can listen to us online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Kyle Kozier, Director of Amateur Scouting for Veritas Hockey. We're discussing the prospects of the San Jose Sharks.
Kyle, the next Sharks prospect that we wanted to ask you about was Troy Grosnick. He's a guy that you're familiar with. He played in the USHL for Cedar Rapids and most recently with Union. And he actually was nominated for the Hobie Baker Award. He was just signed, actually, a couple of days ago on Monday by Doug Wilson and the San Jose Sharks. A lot of people in Winnipeg probably haven't heard about him. What can you tell us about him? And is he one of those guys that the Sharks are really high on?
They probably should be. You know, if you look at his numbers, he's a guy that actually posted better numbers in college in terms of save percentage than he did in the USHL. That save percentage went from hovering around, you know, about 90 to in that 925 at one point, maybe higher. So, you know, plays on a Union team that's fairly sound defensively, but all the same, you certainly can't argue with the numbers. You're pretty solid competitor, about 6'1", so, you know, reaches that threshold of being over 6 feet, which is apparently necessary to be a goalie now in the NHL. I guess in talking to sort of some more knowledgeable people with a better grasp on goaltenders, they are really always impressed with how he tracks the puck in traffic and again, just doesn't give up on anything. So, again, in San Jose's case here, they might have found another guy that can step in for him in that they've had, you know, pretty good goaltending, but it's also been, you know, from time to time has let them down. So I think it's certainly worthwhile for them to take a chance on a guy like that, especially one who's proven he can play at a high level in the collegiate game, and hopefully that can translate into some success for him.
Kyle, we're going to transition away from the San Jose Sharks, and the Frozen Four, I believe, gets underway this weekend. So we wanted to talk to you just briefly about the Frozen Four. You know, who do you like to win, take the whole thing, you know, be the champion of hockey in the NCAA ranks? And, you know, are there any players in particular that we should be looking for, keep an eye on during the Frozen Four this weekend?
You know, the it's really kind of an interesting field, obviously, you know, not a, not really a lot of traditional powers playing. You know, most people obviously are familiar with Yale, and people in this part of the world probably know St. Cloud quite well, but, you know, UMass Lowell is sort of a wild card, but I guess the one thing you'll find with all the teams, they're quite well coached. Certainly no real clear front runner at this point, but say, you know, you point to a team like St. Cloud, who always kind of gets overshadowed in the WKHA by the Minnesotas and the North Dakotas, but they've quietly been, you know, acquiring very good players. Look at a guy like, you know, Drew LeBlanc is there as a Hobie finalist, so going to be really a highly sought-after free agent, too, so I think a lot of people should keep keep a close eye on him. Eric Hartzell is a goaltender from the USHL, went to Quinnipiac, and 6'4", 205, big kid, covers a lot of net, and is quite athletic, so and another free agent that's, you know, probably likely to sign here once the Frozen Four is over, so we keep an eye on a couple of guys like that, and in terms of who's going to win, gosh, it's tough to really pick a clear front runner. The local favorite has got to be St. Cloud. Again, they put together a pretty good program, but you know, you can't argue with what Yale's done either. You knocked out both Minnesota and North Dakota, so you never know. And of course, UMass Lowell's laying in the weeds there too. That's a team that, again, flies under the radar. They're overshadowed by BU and BC, and people don't know a whole lot about them. So it could be very interesting to see how it shapes up. But I guess I'd have to go with the local pick and say St. Cloud.
There you have it. Kyle Kosher is the Director of Amateur Scouting for Veritas Hockey. Thanks, as always, for joining us this evening on NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Anytime, guys. I always enjoy it.
Take care, KK. Thanks very much, bud.
Yeah, see you guys.
Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. One final segment for NHL Midweek. With the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg joined me around the table. Producer Remus is on loan from Rick Ralph in the TSN 1290 Roundtable. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.IllegalCurve.com.
Do we have to pay interest while we have Remus on loan?
No.
Like, is Remus an interest-free loan? Because Remus sometimes loses interest in the show, and that's interest-free right there.
Yeah. No, I don't think, yeah, I don't think we have to pay anything.
It's a variable rate mortgage.
Remus, your thoughts?
A few balloon payments on that one.
Yeah. Over-under. Over-under ends the show.
Can we reverse mortgage?
Yeah.
I don't know, but I'm raging against the Mandel here.
You're raging against the Mandel. That's good. We'll get Ryan Reeves of the St. Louis Blues and Fortuity Mortgage to smack down a little bit. Yeah, you know, if we get out of hand or anything. Over under, Sidney Crosby currently leads the NHL with 56 points. Steven Stamkos is 6 points behind him, and Martin St. Louis is 7 points behind Crosby. Over or under 1.5 players passing Sidney Crosby in points by the end of the regular season.
Shows you how good Crosby was playing.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that, you know, there's still two guys back by 6 or 7 points, it's going to be tough, and that's why you bring the tough questions, Drew. You don't throw us softballs, you don't throw us knuckleballs, you throw us 95 mile per hour fastballs. I like it. I'm going to say two. I think they're both going to pass Crosby, and you know they're out of the playoff picture here. But I think 6 or 7 points for those two guys will be doable.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Desi on that one, and it's always. Just so much talent, and they play with talented players, too. And you got nothing to lose, really. I don't know. I see them both.
Over under. The last time the NHL played a 48-game schedule in 1995...
You were 32.
Thank you. Peter Bondra led the NHL with 34 goals. This year, Stamkos and Ovechkin are tied for the league lead in goals with 26. Over or under 1.5 players scoring more goals this year than Bondra did in 1995?
I'd say under. It's just, I know you're going through streaks, and obviously these guys are putting a lot of pucks on the net, and they're both really talented players, and I know, you know, they're not playing with Michael Pavanka, granted, but I just think that's too hot of a streak to finish the season, especially with, you know, with the way Ovi's been going.
They don't have Kelly Johansson feeding them the puck either. I'm going to say over. Two, both of them. I think that Ovechkin right now is reminding me of the Ovechkin of, you know, 2005, 2008 circa, and I think Stamkos is going to be motivated by this. So I say that those guys both end up at 36 goals.
Over under. Since joining the Pittsburgh Penguins in 2009, the most goals Chris Kunitz has scored in a season is 26. Yeah. He currently has 20 goals so far this season with 8 games remaining. over or under Chris Kunitz scoring 26 goals this season?
Oh, under, Drew. And because there's no Crosby. And I realized, I believe last game, he was actually lined up alongside Evgeny Malkin.
Yep, he was.
Malkin and Ginla.
Yep.
So, I mean, outside shot there, and Malkin's amazing. Still, Crosby's number one, and that's the reason why he's been so good. I mean, Chris Kunitz is a very nice player. He's really turned into a top left winger on that squad, and a great trade by Ray Shiro for Ryan Whitney. You know, really surpassed expectations as far as I'm concerned. But no Crosby, no over.
Yeah, I'm going under as well. He can't score 6 goals in 8 games. Well, I'm not saying he can't. I think it's going to be very difficult for him to do it, even playing with Malkin. But even if he scores, you know, only 1 or 2 goals for the rest of the season, this has been, you know, his best year of his career. Yeah. He's really been impressive this year. And, you know, I really like him. Another Saskatchewan boy.
The Boston Bruins have scored 14 power play goals this year, the fewest in the NHL. Alex Ovechkin leads the NHL in power play goals scored by an individual player, also with 14. Alex Ovechkin will score more power play goals as an individual than over or under 0.5 NHL teams will score as a team.
For the rest of the year?
No, well, taking the year as a whole. They each have 14. The Ovechkin scored 14 power play goals.
Uh-huh.
The Bruins have scored as a team 14 power play goals.
Didn't they just score one behind you there with Chara about 10 minutes ago? I'm going to take under.
Yeah, I don't think they're...
I'll take that goal and run with it.
I don't think I'm going to go under too, Drew. I think it's going to be difficult for Ovechkin to have more goals than the entire Boston Bruins team. At least Claude Julien better hope that it's under, he's not going to be very happy going into the playoffs.
Well, right now, now that they've scored this power play goal in the game against New Jersey, it's now Ovechkin's trailing by 1 goal.
Well, thanks, Drew. I also did grade 1 math. But, you know, the Washington Capitals power play, we've broken it down in the show before. It hasn't stopped at all. It's just incredible amount of talent. And, you know, you can have talent, just quickly, guys, you can have talent on a team, but talent that complements each other is really what you're looking for. It's the chemistry component. And they have that. That power play, I mean, is nasty.
Tops in the league, 25%.
Yeah, we broke down. I mean, it's been amazing. We talked about the Backstrom and Ribeiro interchangeable play there.
Yep.
They're just incredible. And then you talk also about Mike Green and John Carlson. Again, I mean, and obviously there's only one Alexander Ovechkin. But
scored 3 power play goals against the Panthers the other night.
Yeah, when I was watching some of the film on the Panthers, you know, Ovi's just looking unbelievable, and give him full credit.
He's re-energized. Let's be honest. Yeah. I mean, he got his game back. Ovechkin got his groove back.
Yeah, and Adam Oates plays a large part in that. But the person who plays the biggest part in that is Alexander Ovechkin.
Agreed. Quick score update before we wrap up the program. At the end of 40 minutes, the New York Rangers had a good second period. They're now beating the Toronto Maple Leafs 2-1. Carl Hagelin and Ryan McDonagh are the goal scorers for the Rangers. Phil Kessel for the Leafs. In New Jersey, the Boston Bruins are up 4-0 over the New Jersey Devils. Gregory Campbell has 2 goals. Daniel Paille with a goal, and Daniel Charo with a goal. So it looks like Boston's going to beat the Devils, which does the Jets a favor. And the Leafs and the Rangers are still too close to call, but the Rangers do have an advantage, and the Leafs have not been good when trailing after 40 minutes. You can watch that game on TSN. Let's wrap up the show.
Keep your eye on.
Keep your eye on. Ezra Ginsberg, what should people keep their eye on for the rest of this week?
I know Remus is going to like this one. Keep your eye on Radek Dvorak of the Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah,
they signed him 2 weeks ago. He was playing in Europe. He's got 5 points in 5 games, I think. He was on Dallas last year. He was on the Thrashers as recent as the year before the Jets came here. But he's playing with Saku Koivu and Winnick there on the third line. And he's, you know, providing some nice offense there. So keep your eye on him. He's a guy that I think a lot of people saw, you know, on the score sheet for the Ducks. And they thought he was, you know, done from the NHL. So keep your eye on Dvorak, a guy that's come back and contributed.
Richard Pollock.
There's no pun intended at all, and I don't mean to be funny, but I honestly think you need to keep your eye on Mark Stahl, because without him, the Rangers can't do anything, as far as I'm concerned. And they are in the 8th spot right now with 42 points, playing against Pittsburgh if the season were to end today. Obviously, the Jets are tied with them. But they have the lead in this game, and they have 2 games in hand. Without Mark Stahl, they cannot beat Pittsburgh. With Mark Stahl, I believe that they can beat Pittsburgh.
I'll wrap up Keep Your Eye On by talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins like you just mentioned. Keep your eye on the Pittsburgh Penguins record. The Pens are in position at this point with 8 games left in the season to become the first team since the 2001-2002 Nashville Predators to go through the regular season without an overtime or a shootout loss. Of course, when the Predators did that, they did that in an 82-game season, losing 41 games, all of them in regulation time. That's it for this Wednesday evening and NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. A big thank you to Ben Kuzma for having joined us. Also, a big thank you to Bernstein's Deli for being a sponsor of this program. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes and on the TSN1290.ca website. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.IllegalCurve.com. It's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news. Saturday afternoon, 12 noon, regular start time for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN1290. 3 hours or thereabouts of Winnipeg Jets conversation. For my colleagues Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock, for producer Michael Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We thank you for listening to NHL Midweek, and until Saturday, we wish you good night and good luck.
You've been listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve. Join us every Wednesday at 6 p.m. for your midweek NHL update. And join Drew Mindell, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg Saturdays for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things NHL. TSN 1290. TSN 1290.ca.